Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Mario Ritter and Anna Mateo. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Mario Ritter.
Many people were shocked last week by news of the planned talks between the leaders of the United States and North Korea. U.S. President Donald Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un are supposed to meet by May. Yet, as of Monday, the Associated Press noted that North Korean media had yet to confirm the meeting. A South Korean spokesman said, "I feel they're approaching this matter with caution, and they need time to organize their stance." Observers say the meeting has raised expectations of progress in resolving the nuclear crisis on the Korean Peninsula. But they warn the process leading to removal of all nuclear weapons from the area is complex. On Saturday, Trump said his talks with Kim could end with no agreement, or they could be the greatest deal for the world. Chung Sung Chang is an expert on North Korea at the Sejong Institute in South Korea. He is hopeful about the meeting. It is expected that there will be more rapid progress regarding the freezing and dismantling of the North Korean nuclear program than in the past, as the leaders of the U.S. and North Korea will meet directly this time, he said. Experts suggest North Korea could offer to stop developing intercontinental ballistic missiles. The country has said its missiles can hit the United States. The experts believe that North Korea could announce an extension of its freeze on missile and nuclear tests. They also say the North could even offer to reduce the amount of nuclear materials it has saved for making nuclear weapons. It is unclear what the U.S. government might offer in return. The Trump administration is concerned about offering help in exchange for promises. Officials note that North Korea failed to honor earlier agreements. Experts suggest the U.S. would likely demand that international inspectors be given permission to verify any freeze or breakup of the nuclear program. Only then, they say, would economic actions against the North be reduced. However, the U.S. government would have to offer something that North Korea wants in return. Go Myung-hyun is a North Korea expert with the Asan Institute for Policy Studies in Seoul. He said, "In order to make the whole process successful, for which Donald Trump will be responsible, he would have to provide economic concessions." North Korea and the United States have made the possibility of talks more likely by easing tensions. The North Korean government has not tested nuclear weapons or long-distance missiles since November of last year. The U.S. side has dropped its condition that North Korea take real measures to end its nuclear program before talks can begin. The Trump administration, however, says its maximum pressure campaign will remain in place until a deal is reached. The U.S. has led efforts in the United Nations Security Council to put in place sanctions that have cost North Korea billions of dollars in trade. Security Council measures also have punished individuals and companies linked to the North Korean government. Some experts are concerned that North Korea could be seeking to delay international action while strengthening its nuclear program. Some experts think North Korea has from 13 to 30 nuclear weapons. The North continues to produce nuclear fuel, plutonium, at its Yongbyon Nuclear Center. Experts say it could take years for inspectors to confirm that the production had been stopped. In that time, they say, North Korea could add to its nuclear weapons stockpile. The Asan Institute's Go Myung-hyun said if North Korea can have nuclear weapons for the next 20 years in the process of nuclear disarmament, then North Korea becomes a de facto nuclear state. South Korean President Moon Jae-in is to hold talks with Kim Jong-un in April before the proposed meeting with the U.S. President. Moon and Kim are expected to talk about a proposal for restarting communications between the North and South Korean militaries. Other subjects for discussion include reunions for families separated by the Korean War and restarting humanitarian aid. The Moon administration also may offer North Korea an economic deal tied to progress in denuclearization. The South Korean leader might offer to reopen the Kaesong Industrial Center, which was closed after a North Korean nuclear test in 2016. The factory complex provided jobs to thousands of North Koreans. The international community accused the North of using money from the complex for its weapons programs. I'm Mario Ritter.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Health and Lifestyle Report. March 16th is International Sleep Day, and we should all celebrate the act of sleeping. Studies have shown that a good night's rest helps us stay healthy, both mentally and physically. And researchers say sleep is probably the best tool we have for memory and learning. Michael Twiry is director of the National Center on Sleep Disorders Research at America's National Institutes of Health.
Twiri is an expert on the science of sleep and sleep disorders. He told me that a good night's sleep helps us to learn better.
Getting a good night's sleep is important for the learning and memory process. It's important because it stores the training exercises and the learning exercises into our more permanent memory while we're sleeping 7 to 8 hours in bed. And then the next morning when you wake up, your mind is better prepared to act on that information.
But what about getting rest during the middle of the day? Short periods of sleep may help our brains work better, or so says a recent study on napping. Past studies have shown that napping can help babies and young children learn better, and napping can help brain performance in older adults. Taking a nap may also help this group of people fight off age-related memory loss. Many Americans do nap, but one-third of all adults in the United States are also chronically tired, notes the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. It found that 50 million to 70 million Americans have chronic sleep disorders. So someone who naps as a way of paying off a sleep debt may not experience the same improvements from napping as a healthy, well-rested person would. Also, many people may not want to admit that they take naps. They may think that napping shows they are weak or lack energy, that only children, the very old, sick, or lazy people nap is not an uncommon opinion. In fact, we Americans sometimes do a very strange thing. Some brag about how few hours of sleep they need each night. Health experts suggest that adults get 7 to 8 hours of sleep each night. People who claim they only sleep 4 or 5 hours a night may think they are somehow stronger than the average human, superhuman, if you will. However, that may be changing. Many offices now offer napping rooms, and napping cafes are appearing in many U.S. cities, including Washington, D.C. While resting in the middle of the workday may seem like a luxury to Americans, napping is very much part of a normal, everyday life in other parts of the world. Take China, for example. While it depends on the age and job, China, generally speaking, is a land of nappers. So researchers recently looked at information provided by nearly 3,000 Chinese adults aged 65 or older. They wanted to learn if napping after a midday meal, a tradition in many areas, had any effect on the mental performance of the subjects. First, the researchers asked the people if they napped and for how long. Then, based on their answers, researchers put them into 4 groups. Non-nappers, short nappers, less than 30 minutes. Moderate nappers, 30 to 90 minutes. And extended nappers, more than 90 minutes. Nearly 60% of those 3,000 people said they did take a nap after lunch and that their naps lasted anywhere from 30 to 90 minutes. Most of the subjects who said they napped for about an hour. The study found that people who took an hour-long nap did much better on mental tests than those who did not nap. The hour-long nappers also did better on the tests than those who napped for shorter and longer periods. In this study, it seems that the most effective nap lasted for about an hour, but not much longer. These researchers reported their findings in the Journal of the American Geriatric Society. Keep in mind, however, that these are findings for those over the age of 65. Yet Dr. Michael Twiry notes that an hour-long nap may be too long for young, healthy adults.
Currently, we're recommending that we try to sleep for about 30 minutes or less. And 30 minutes is enough to remove the pressure to sleep and will help us feel more awake. If we nap longer, we will get trapped into those deeper layers of sleep, which can be hard to get out of.
The feeling Twiry described is called sleep inertia, the period when you awake from a very deep sleep. For a time, you are unable to think clearly.
So sleep inertia is where someone is being awakened from deep sleep. Some individuals may find it hard to change instantly from that deep sleep, where everything is a bit foggy and confused, to the fully awake state. We may be a little bit clumsy. We may not have all of our thoughts in order when we wake from deep sleep.
The National Sleep Foundation also warns that if you have trouble falling asleep at night, limit your daytime nap to under 45 minutes. Also, nap before 3 p.m. in the afternoon. And that's the Health and Lifestyle Report. I'm Ana Mateo.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. By the summer of 1862, the American Civil War had been going on for more than a year. The Union had won some battles. The Confederacy had won others. But neither side was in a position to win the war. President Abraham Lincoln needed a major victory. He was losing the support of both politicians and the public. A major victory would not only help him that way, it would also make it easier for him to make an important announcement. For a number of months, he had been planning an announcement about the black people held as slaves in the South. It would come to be known as the Emancipation Proclamation. Today, Kay Gallant and Harry Monroe tell about Abraham Lincoln's Emancipation Proclamation.
At the end of August 1862, Confederate troops, under the command of Robert E. Lee, defeated the main Union army at Manassas, Virginia. The battlefield was less than 50 kilometers from Washington. The year before, Confederate troops had sent the Union army fleeing from that same battlefield. Now, they had done it again. With this latest victory, General Lee decided on a major move. He would carry the war into the northern states. Lee took his army of 60,000 men across the Potomac River into Maryland. He ordered some of his men to capture the Union position at Harper's Ferry. He moved the others to Sharpsburg, a town on the Potomac River. He put his men into position along Antietam Creek, just outside of town. His lines extended almost 3 kilometers. There, at Antietam, he would make his stand. He was still close enough to Virginia to withdraw if the Union force following him proved too strong.
The Union force arrived in the middle of September. It did not attack immediately. It spent one full day getting into position along Antietam Creek, across from the Confederate Army. It attacked the following day at sunrise. The Union general, George McClellan, planned to attack all along the Confederate line at the same time. But this did not happen. First, Union troops attacked one end of the line, which extended into a field full of tall corn plants. Then they attacked the center of the line, which was in an old, deeply sunken road that gave it good protection. Finally, they attacked at the other end of the line. For each northern attack, General Lee was able to move men to where they were needed. The northern troops got within 25 meters of the Confederate line, but they could not break through anywhere.
On the first day of battle at Antietam, Lee lost 25% of his men. On the second day, the two armies faced each other without firing. They were too tired to fight. As they rested, however, fresh Union soldiers moved into position. Lee knew they would attack with full force the next day. He knew he could not win. Sadly, he ordered his men back to Virginia. It was now clear Antietam was a northern victory. It was not a complete victory. The Union Army could have chased the Confederate Army and destroyed it. But General McClellan did not do this. He was satisfied that he had stopped the invasion.
In Washington, President Lincoln welcomed the news. He had waited a long time for a northern victory. A few days after the battle, Lincoln held a special meeting with his cabinet. He talked about the Declaration on Slavery, which he had prepared. It would free Negro slaves in the rebel states of the South. "As you remember," he said, "I put the Declaration aside several weeks ago until I could issue it supported by a military victory. The action of the army against the rebels has not been exactly what I should have liked, but the rebels have been driven out of Maryland, and Pennsylvania is no longer in danger of invasion." President Lincoln said he thought the time was right to announce the Emancipation Proclamation. The cabinet made some minor changes in the document, and Lincoln signed it.
Newspapers printed the proclamation. This is what it said:
"I, Abraham Lincoln, President of the United States and Commander-in-Chief of the Army and Navy, do hereby declare that on the first day of January, 1863, all persons held as slaves within any state then in rebellion against the United States shall then become and be forever free. The government of the United States, including the military and naval forces, will recognize and protect the freedom of such persons, and will interfere in no way with any efforts they may make for their actual freedom."
President Lincoln had tried to keep the question of slavery out of the Civil War. To him, there was just one reason for fighting: to save the Union. Nothing meant more to him than preventing the nation from splitting up. Lincoln feared that the issue of slavery would weaken the Northern war effort. Many men throughout the North would fight to save the Union. they would not fight to free the slaves. Lincoln also needed the support of the four slave states that did not leave the Union: Delaware, Kentucky, Maryland, and Missouri. He could not be sure of their support if he declared that the purpose of the war was to free the slaves. As Lincoln waited for a Union victory to announce his Emancipation Proclamation, he wrote a letter to the New York Tribune newspaper. The letter was to prepare the public for what was to come. This is what Lincoln said.
My chief object in this struggle is to save the Union. It is not either to save or destroy slavery. If I could save the Union without freeing any slave, I would do it. And if I could save it by freeing all the slaves, I would do it. And if I could save it by freeing some and leaving others alone, I would also do that. What I do about slavery and the colored race, I do because I believe it helps to save the Union. This is how I see my official duty. It does not change my wish as a person that all men everywhere could be free.
President Lincoln failed to keep the question of slavery out of the Civil War. As the war went on, month after long month, people in the North began to see it as more than a struggle for national unity. They began to see it as a struggle for human freedom. Abolitionists were active. In speeches and writings, they said over and over again that slavery was evil. As public opinion began to change, anti-slavery members of Congress gained more power. By the summer of 1862, they had enough support to pass laws ending slavery in Washington, D.C., and United States territories. They also pushed through Congress a bill that would do much to end slavery in the states.
The bill was called the Confiscation Act. It gave the federal government the power to confiscate or seize the property of all persons who supported the Southern Rebellion. Slaves were considered property, so any slaves seized under the Act would become free immediately. Slaves who escaped from rebel slave owners also would be free. The bill would not affect slaves owned by persons who supported the Union. President Lincoln did not like the Confiscation Act. He thought it interfered with his wartime powers as commander-in-chief.
However, Lincoln was under great pressure from abolitionists, so he signed the new law. But he did not plan to enforce it. He still hoped for a plan that would free the slaves slowly, over time. He proposed such a plan, but only for the border states between North and South. Under his plan, the federal government would buy slaves in the border states and free them. Lawmakers from the border states rejected Lincoln's plan, and that is when he decided to issue the Emancipation Proclamation.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.